This is the podcast of the German Historical Institute London, a research centre dedicated to supporting and connecting students and scholars from Britain and Germany. The podcast series presents current research in British, German and European history, as well as colonial and global history. For more information on the German Historical Institute London, future events, the GHIL Library, studentships and more podcast episodes, please visit our website at ghil.ac.uk.
In this GHIL joint lecture, in cooperation with the Modern History Research Seminar from the University of Oxford, Christina Marina will talk about A Broken Balance, a political-cultural history of Germany since the 1980s. The political culture of the, quote, Berlin Republic, unquote, has its roots as much in the era of German division as in the transformative years around 1989. Yet it is much more than a story of the convergence of triumphant West German democracy and failed East German dictatorship. The project takes as its point of departure the increasingly polarized political climate in Germany in recent years and the strong support for right-wing populism, particularly in the East. It explores the ways in which ordinary citizens in East and West understood themselves as citizens, quote, their, unquote, state, and the meaning and purpose of democratic politics. This integrated political-cultural history, quote, from below, unquote, crossing the watershed of 1989, illustrates that dramatically divergent conceptions of citizenship and democracy account for many of the enduring differences between the democratic cultures and practices in East and West. Christina Marina is Professor of Contemporary History at the University of Bielefeld. Her research focuses on major themes in 19th and 20th century German and European history, especially Nazi Germany and the Holocaust, political and memory cultures in Germany since 1945, and the history of political ideas, particularly socialism, Marxism, and communism.
Good evening. Thanks for coming. Thank you for the invitation, as well as the kind introduction. Indeed, for me as well, this is one of the first real-life lectures that I'm honored and able to give. And in addition, quite a challenge because this project has been born in German and is conducted in German entirely at the moment. And this is the first time that I was encouraged to speak about it in English. So that's quite a challenge for me as well. So I'm going to take you into the last 3 to 4 decades of the German history in an attempt to sketch the outlines of what I call a political cultural history of Germany from below since the 1980s. And my tentative title of the book that I tentatively intend to write, I'm writing on it for a few years already, coming out of work that I've done with colleagues together trying to explain the rise of the AfD, especially the strong support of the AfD in East Germany to this day. But the book is kind of a work in progress. I told you so before, so you won't get finished results and a ready-made manuscript, but something that is quite tentative. And I look forward to the discussion because I'm very much still exploring, studying, examining the sources that I'm dealing with. So the lecture will have 3 main parts. I will start with a preface that outlines the approach, the questions that I have, the approach that I take, and the sources that I'm dealing with. And then there are 3 steps along which I will address the topic. I will start with an argument about how democracy was conceptualized among ordinary Germans in the 1980s in both parts of Germany, East and West, and not only in the late 1980s, but beginning in the late 70s, actually. And then I will take a brief look at East German discourses around the revolution of 1989 and the specific and peculiar notions of democracy that we can observe in those months and years. And then I will, the last part will lead us to some conclusions on the development since the 1980s, seeking to answer the question how East German notions, perceptions of democracy, of the state, of citizenship actually shaped and influenced the political culture of the Berlin Republic. And I will end with a few conclusions where I hope we will have plenty of stuff for the discussion. I will start with an unusual culprit, the Bundespräsident, President Steinmeier. One of his speeches that in my view, in terms of our topic today, was most remarkable was the one he gave on October 9th, 2019, remembering the 30th anniversary of the 70,000 demonstration in Leipzig, right a month before the wall actually fell. That was the day in 2019 that attempted massacre of Jews in the synagogue in Halle had just taken place a few hours earlier. So the day is remarkable in many ways. He did not change the manuscript of his lecture in the evening in the Gewandhaus in Leipzig, instead stuck to his narrative. And the key point he made with regards to Eastern West German and Berlin Republic democracy is on the slide here. And he addressed the revolutionaries that were in the room right away and personally, saying, many of these courageous people who made the revolution of 1989 are with us here today. Katrin Mahler-Walter, Gesine Oltmanns, and Ines Maria Kölner, Uwe Schwabe, Tobias Hollitzer, and Roland Jahn. It is great to have you with us here today. Freya Klier will speak on behalf of the many in just a moment. Their stories help to shape Germany's history of democracy. They are therefore in keeping with the best tradition of our history, the tradition of Germany's freedom movements of 1884 and 1918. Their accounts are exceptional stories of the shining moments for our country. They have added an important part to our history of democracy. So I have a few questions that directly relate to Steinmeier's argument. How exactly did East German democratic traditions shape post-unification political culture? If the argument is 1989 has written a major chapter in the history of German democracy, then I want to explore what that actually means in terms of historical and political realities. How exactly, beyond, of course, the courageous act of liberating the East German population or self-liberation of the East German population from the SED dictatorship, the question is how exactly those traditions, democratic traditions, actually shape post-unification political culture. How did East and West German perceptions of democracy, the state, and notions about what it means to be a citizen compare and relate to one another in the 1980s? Where did these perceptions converge and diverge, continue to diverge after 1989? And what are some of the causes, the historical causes, for the relatively strong support for populism and right-wing extremism and the relatively weak support for liberal democracy in the East today? In brackets, there's also the question whether German democracy, that at the very end of the book, I think I want to discuss with some of my findings and relate to some of my findings. So what I'm attempting to do in this book is to write a political cultural history from below, focusing on the individual and group notions of democracy, state, and citizenship. I seek to explore the subjective dimension of the societal foundations of a political system, adapting the concept, the classic concept of political culture by Almond and Berber, and combining it with historically merged concepts of long-term Wertewandel, namely traditions, mentalities, belongings, routines, and that follows the work of, among others, Ruhe and Merwin. So I'm interested in the democratic, and I put this in quotation marks here because, of course, as you know, this is a huge word with plenty of layers and meanings, and I want to signal that here. So I want to explore the democratic hopes, expectations, and routines within a society expressed in normative, discursive, and practical terms. So I go beyond what social scientists do, the demographic or opinion polls that poll people's intentions and positions on democracy. I want to use those as well. I want to relate those as well, but combine them with a qualitative hermeneutic analysis of mostly ego documents, masters, and partly those ego documents. I'm going to say something about this, these documents in a minute. In part, there are huge numbers of those ego documents in several archives across Germany, namely ego documents that stem from contexts of direct, proactive citizen-state interaction. That means where citizens picked up a pen or a computer in later years, a typewriter, and took notes to get in touch, get in contact with the government, parts of the state, representatives of the state, media, and the like. So those sources are petitions, citizens' codes, correspondence, Bürgerbriefe, leaflets, pamphlets, collections of signatures, local, partly clandestine press, civil societies, and so forth. And some of those sources, for instance, the Bürgerbriefe, the citizens' letters that are preserved in the Bundespräsidialamt, the Bundesarchiv in Koblenz, those are thousands of letters have been preserved. They are thematically ordered, but you actually have numbers that go into the thousands. You have, apart from the what we know as Eingaben for the GDR, there are way beyond those state Eingaben collections of thousands of letters that are not in a narrow sense Eingaben that are preserved in the Stasi archive in the BSTU as a result of being sent there or picked up by the Stasi and several other parts of East Germany and collected there for criminal investigations. So those were letters that were not actually intended by GDR citizens to be written to some authority in order to solve an issue, but they were written in order to engage with an institution. And then that institution, including newspapers, called the Stasi and said, we have to investigate this. This is subversive writings. We have these here, we collect them and we give them to the Stasi. So those are there in the BSTU archives as well. And there are tens of thousands, as far as I can see, of those documents. A third large collection of documents are the ones, letters that were sent to the Gemeinsame Verfassungskommission des Bundestages und des Bundesrates. That is a commission that was set up after the unification of Germany in order to deal with the constitutional issues that came up during the unification process. That is a commission that worked for 3 to 4 years. And in the course of its work, it received 800,000 letters from the general public, from ordinary citizens, of which only 5,000 have been preserved. For whatever reason, the archivist cannot tell me what the selection criteria were and how these 5,000 came to be archived. But those, anyway, there's still 5,000 and they are there, and it's quite a challenge to deal with them. But they are, you know, fantastic, interesting, relevant documents. And I have brought a few to give you an impression. And it's a real, methodologically, it's quite a challenge to find a good way of dealing with them, methodologically, a sound way of dealing with them. So those archives that I just mentioned, the Bundesarchiv, the BSTU, the Robert Havemann Archiv, of course, where clandestine subversive literature is collected, also personal papers of protagonists of the opposition in the GDR, but also sources relating to more general discourses, for instance, among teachers in the revolutionary years and months that can be found there. Then the very interesting archive, der Bürgerbewegung in Leipzig, where I found boxes with leaflets, letters, ego documents, gathered in 1989 and 1990 from grassroots initiatives, neighborhoods that, you know, kind of got together to recreate democracy and forge their lives, their futures, and they have never been studied thus far. And the last one that I mentioned here, those are not all, but those are the most important ones, is the Parlamentsarchiv, where I just talked about these petitions that are preserved. So the somewhat provocative argument that I'm trying to make is that we are used to seeing West German democracy as the history of democracy and East German history as the history of a dictatorship. And I think it is useful to think about East German political cultural history also in terms of being part of a democratic history, because democracy always belonged as a term, as a concept, as an idea, also had a firm place in East German history after 1949, not only in the late 1980s, not only during the Friedliche Revolution, but it was in the name of the state, the German Democratic Republic. It was mentioned about 90 times in the Constitution. And as you all know, the notion of socialist democracy had a lot to say about a certain kind of democracy that was being realized or claimed to be realized in East Germany. So I'm trying to shift the perspective a little bit by arguing that it is worthwhile exploring how the history of German post-war democracy and democratization actually can be written if we take in and integrate East Germany's history of democracy, of democratization, of democracy as Anspruch, as an idea, as a claim during the Cold War and the division of Germany, how that actually changes our view and our narrative of post-war German democratization. And to illustrate my point, I brought along the well-known first sentences of the constitutions, the basic law, not the first sentence, but Article 20, which talks about what kind of state the Federal Republic of Germany is, a sentence that has not changed until this day, as opposed to the East German constitution, which in 1949, I've noted it in the smaller letters, originally said Germany is an impartible democratic republic, very much still in line with the idea that this division is temporary and the German lands would be a socialist democracy, a unified democracy soon to be. The 1968 constitution was rewritten in that sense. It said on the issue of democracy and what kind of state political system the country had, it said the German Democratic Republic is a socialist state of the German nation. It is the political organization of the working population in town and country who are jointly realizing socialism under the leadership of the working class and its Marxist-Leninist party. And that is clearly the opposite of what is described in the West German constitution, where the system is built on elections and the separation of powers. Further, another example from the great book by Richardson Little on the human rights dictatorship, a quote from a jurist of judicial discourse in East Germany, which argued that democracy that actually, just like anti-fascism and the denazification of East Germany had been accomplished by founding the GDR, there was a parallel discourse that democracy was actually already established with the establishment of the GDR. On our side, it argued with a view back towards the National Socialist era are those who fought for human rights during the dark night of fascism. The defendants are now the judges. The persecuted of yesterday are today the rulers. And they have built a Rechtsstaat in which human rights are the cornerstone of our democracy. To paraphrase Heinrich Heine, a catalogue of basic rights does not make a man free, just as a cookbook cannot make him full. And a third example from the East German discourse from the Kleines Politisches Wörterbuch, which in fact was cheap and easily accessible and sold by the 100,000s to East German households about to give them an everyday kind of vocabulary and dictionary on the political system of the GDR. Here, socialist democracy was defined as political power of the working masses, of the people led by the working class and its Marxist-Leninist party. With the dictatorship of the proletariat, it overcomes and supersedes formal bourgeois democracy. So the notion was that East German democracy was a step further, was a step ahead, was a major step towards overcoming classical or conventional formal bourgeois democracy. And that Anspruch, that idea, that conception was, of course, a major part of East German propaganda. It was a hollow campaign slogan. But I would argue that it in everyday life, and in educational and political and cultural context, the idea that people were living in a socialist democratic state had a reality, had real impact, had real power even over people's minds and hearts. And I would argue that in the long run, the constant and ever-growing distance between that idea and that claim and reality was part why the state failed at the end of the day, which, you know, that's an argument that rests on the assumption that it was taken seriously for a very long time by very large numbers of people, way beyond the SED and those parties that were organized, I would argue. So in the book, I will try to sketch the 1980s as a decade, and I follow Frank Bösch, I think, and his argument that with the late 1970s, the kind of our present time started, and I think it makes much sense to start this research as well in the late 1970s. I don't want to go into too much detail here on that, but I think the caesura that he has argued is quite valuable for understanding the longer transformational and co-transformational processes that came about with the revolution of 1989. So the basic argument is that both societies were very much on the move, very much politicized. Of course, we know so much about West German democracy, about the Außerparlamentarische Opposition, the social movements, the economic movement, the peace movement. And we know much about the oppositional movement in East Germany as well, and those transnational connections that also existed, the role of the media in engaging East Germans in the course of the 1980s. But if you look at the sources that I just mentioned, you find that also in the East German case, this is not something that was limited to the margins or to the fringes of society and just an oppositional movement, but the broad center of society was highly politicized, also in East Germany, was engaging in discussing the fundamentals of the state, of society, and in kind of a adventurous comparison, I take those letters that were written to the Bundespräsident during the 1980s that you can find neatly organized in the Bundesarchiv and put them, see and investigate how West Germans saw themselves, not directly, but how actually their notion of being a citizen expressed in these letters. For instance, that's just an example, but you, on the left side, there's a letter by parents' committee from a school that was engaging in a critique of how the Bundestag, how the campaign around the Bundestag election in terms of how political opponents treated each other and how that related to whether we're actually trying to raise children in a decent way to become decent and polite and educated citizens, and what the political class is doing is not at all what we expect them and what's in the system, actually. And on the right, there's an example of a letter that I found in the BSTU, just as an example for people in East Germany. Of course, Reisefreiheit and the right to travel was an issue, and it is studied much. But what these letters actually show in with regards to how those men and women saw themselves as GDR citizens, what the expectations were when they sat down and took a pen and wrote to their state or some government institution, I think it can be highly interesting to trace what notions of state, of democracy, socialist democracy, and being a citizen in such a state actually existed. So I've written about that. There's some essay that was already published where you can see some more of those sources. And I also tried to explain how I try to move beyond just using them as anecdotal sources and try to analyze them in a systematic way. And the conclusions that I drew from comparing those two bunches of citizens' correspondence in East and West Germany in the 1980s is that you see on both sides that participation by voice is being aspired, and it's a regular, ordinary citizen's practice. And it has also some aspect of, in East Germany, of simulation. I think the simulated practice of democracy is a crucial point in the tradition of East German democracy to this day, that some of those discourses voluntarily and explicitly pretend to be doing something that they're actually not doing, namely citizen participation in a meaningful way. Both letter collections reflect a reform mode that people who write to the state, that they're not desperate, they're not in East Germany either, even if they're highly critical, they're not want to get rid of the state, but they engage in a reform discourse. In the West, it's dialogical. In the East, it's confrontational, even including the threat of violence, of course. And including in the later 1980s, a lot of letters that are themselves racist, anti-Bolshevist, anti-Russian, but also at least as many letters who say there's a problem in this country with racism and anti-Bolshevism and violence. That was very much on East Germans' minds from the mid-1980s. And those letters show both sides of that medal nicely. So in the West, people would, you know, if you would have to summarize, I think, in my view, in the West, people tended to discuss rules and procedures, while in the East, those letters are busy discussing ideals and fundamentals. And as I said, in both instances, those sources from the center of society, if you will, from people who, of course, there's a self-selection going on if people really decide to write. But I think in the quantity we have and in the broadness we have with these collections, they actually allow for the argument that this is a broad, it shows a broad societal engagement, which we know for West Germany, of course. But in comparison, I think for East Germany, there's some rethinking to be done with regards to the East German side of this equation. So if we think forward to the late 1980s, and the Democracy Unbound is the title of that section, where I want to stress that there's a big difference between the revolution prior to the fall of the wall and after the fall of the wall. And we have to take the months leading up to the fall of the wall in terms of history of democracy in Germany, I think more seriously when it comes to East Germany. And I studied, and you all know that because I'm preaching to the choir, but I studied mostly oppositional sources, but also sources from the general public, from discussions taking place all over East Germany in late 1989, before the fall of the wall. And what I realized is that there was this peculiar kind of public, of Öffentlichkeit, that emerged in the months between the Kommunalwahlen, the regional elections, and the discussions about the fraud, there are 40,000 letters in the ESTU archive by East Germans protesting the fraud of the elections in May 1989. Between those elections and November, late October, early November 1989, there's a sense, those sources, and it kind of jumped at me. There's a sense that we all are in this together. There's a public in East Germany that has a quasi-familial feeling to it. And the paradigmatic document, the first page of the Neues Forum, shows that the relationship between the state and society is thought about in terms of a relationship, right? The Beziehung zwischen Staat und Gesellschaft ist gestört. The communication between state and society is not destroyed, but defect. And if you take those documents further and you know, add to them other sources from other oppositional groups, you find that the nation is viewed and seen and conceptualized as kind of a political family. In a German text, I talk about a pan-familiäre Öffentlichkeit. And it is really striking that those calls, and maybe that's something that revolutions, you know, share, that if people decide to become reformist revolutionaries, because of, as you know, most of them did not want an end to the GDR at that point. They wanted a reform of the political system of the GDR, but they would not want to abandon and do away with the state itself. That's an important insight to keep in mind. But it's really striking how they addressed each and every individual in East Germany as now being invited and needed to get this reform underway. So the Neues Forum says we are building a shared political platform for the entire GDR, which is to enable people from all professions, walks of life, parties and groups to participate in the discussion and handling of the existential social problems in this country. The Demokratische Aufbruch writes, the party allows for all citizens to join the emerging working groups without becoming a member. It encourages the participation of all citizens in the cultural, social, and economic shaping of the GDR. Another example from Demokratie Jetzt. Dear friends, fellow citizens, and Mitbetroffene, our country is living in inner strife. People excoriate themselves, reiben sich wund. At the conditions, some resign. A great loss of consent for that which has grown historically in the GDR is engulfing the land. We invite all who want to participate to a dialogue about the principles and concepts for a democratic reform of our country. Let us all come together and jointly resurrect hope in our country. And the last one, addressed to children. Dear children, what is democracy? It is easy to explain. We all, children and adults, have the right to say what we think. Too long we have failed to do so. So when these events accelerated and the wall actually fell in November 1989, you have kind of two balances to draw. There's 89 is the year in which the Bundesrepublik celebrates itself for having achieved a liberal democracy, looking back on four decades of more or less successful democratization and liberalization, truly having arrived at itself as a democracy, the Erste Republik von Dauer, as a geglückte, yeah, as a succeeded attempt, a second attempt of democracy. And in East Germany, you have a completely failed attempt of democracy and a debris of ideas, notions, hopes that were related to a socialist democracy that now disseminated among a much larger mass media driven public that was no longer familial. It was no longer a closed, of course, a closed kind of a family of all that sit in one boat that need to be formed. But this was unbound in a way by 1989, you know, and attached to that, the many opportunities to actually get down to work with ideas that were floating around, but also disrupting and terminating a lot of notions. And we know that from those, especially from the studies and also the self narratives of opposition leaders and thinkers from the opposition who did not gain much political support in the months thereafter. So this argument, and I'm curious what you think, this argument kind of picks up where Mary Fulbrook, you know, left off with her participatory dictatorship. And I think we need to take this a bit, which I think is, it was contested, but of course it's a concept that I think, in my view, explains quite a bit about how East German dictatorship, how the society actually worked. But to integrate this insight that a dictatorship, and not only the German one, of course, depends on massive cooperation and participation, how to relay that to the idea that this dictatorship actually worked with the idea of democracy and related to democracy and felt itself to be some kind of democracy, I think should be taken seriously, and we should move beyond just doing away with it as propaganda. So the question then is how this all plays out in the Berlin Republic. And that's where, of course, the contemporary historians' means get smaller and tighter, because the archival evidence, you know, I don't get letters to Richard von Weizsäcker from 1992. Still, you know, December 1991 is the last month that I get, and I have to wait. And you actually can apply, and it's worthwhile. Maybe I should share it. One of the Bestände, the collections that I'm looking at the Parlamentsarchiv, are letters to the Treuhanduntersuchungsausschuss, which investigated how the Abwicklung, the wrap-up of the East German democracy economy actually took place. And there was one in 1992, 1993. And there are letters that as many West Germans, surprisingly, as East Germans, wrote to that commission. And I was promised to get access to them because they are within the Schutzfristen. You still need to apply for them. But I could already see a list of 130, 140 letters by citizens all over Germany who wrote to the Treuhanduntersuchungsausschuss. So there are sources for the post-1989-90 period for this book. But it kind of, you know, I'm fighting an imbalance with regards to those massive sources that I have for the 1980s. And we are, you know, chartering into more essayistic territory or relying on social scientific and political science studies that are valuable here as well, as I will mention in a bit. So to summarize to kind of sketch what I think should be recalled, of course, most of this is well known to you, is that there was a strong sense that there were beginnings in 1989, 1990, that a real democracy is now being accomplished, can be accomplished. And the idea of roundtables, of course, which was not born in East Germany, but it was highly popular in the first months, kind of illustrates that dedication to all citizens' participation in a democratic renewal in Germany. It ends pretty quickly with the first three and the last elections in the GDR in March 1990, where, and this is something I keep telling the public if I speak in public in East Germany, this was something, you know, overwhelming majority of East Germans voted to have a fast and secure unification, a Beitritt to West Germany, following Article 23. So there was no article in 146, which is the opportunity or the actual the condition of the Grundgesetz to have a unified German constitution once the country is unified. That is still there, the article, but it's never been put into practice or realized. And one of the chapters is going to deal with the discussions coming out of this constitutional context and the commission that I mentioned at the attempts to save some of those peculiar democratic ideas coming out of the East German Revolution for the Grundgesetz context, which there's no surprise, did not really get too much. Then there's, of course, this range of issues that with Aufbau Ost and the Bilanzierungsdiskurs, which I despise by now, that, you know, we look at this period almost exclusively in terms of gains and losses and what has been right, what has been done wrong. The innere Einheitsdiskurs, the inner unity, is a narrative that kind of is self-defeating from the get-go, and it handles notions of society, of a homogeneous society, that are highly problematic, not only in the German context, but of course in a larger global, transnationally open German context. There's a lot of reconstruction, but there's also disruption. There's pluralization, but also misrepresentation. I think that is one of the insights that we agree on, I think, by now, that there's 30 years on. Peculiarly and remarkably, East Germans are overrepresented in percentages in positions of government, parties, and administrations, state administrations. There are about 23% East Germans in those areas. That's Reikolmorgens Forschung research. But that's the era where there's a sense that they're underrepresented, while in fact it's the era where they're overrepresented. So the question is actually, what does that actually mean? What does statistical number actually indicate? And are Merkel and Gauck really exceptions to the rule? So those issues of representation, misrepresentation, and elite structures are still with us. And I'm not going to solve that in that book. So the AfD and the Wende 2.0, I don't know if you're familiar with the Wende 2.0 notion, all of you, that the AfD, the right-wing populists, claim to be completing the peaceful revolution of 1989 by now giving a voice to East Germans who are no longer represented by the left, by the post-socialists, but now by the right-wing populists. And the question is whether and how, I don't think that there's a question whether, I think in which ways, that's the question, that divided democratic legacy continues into the present. And the challenge is, of course, to trace these continuities, peculiarities, convergences, and divergences, and I'm trying to do so in these mass documents. So when I'm to make this a little more fleshy, I've brought along three examples where you, I hope you get an idea what I'm talking about when I say there are peculiar East German democratic notions to be grappled with. One is it actually an East and West German initiatives and a call for a plebiscit and a Volksbegehren, a popular vote, something they do in Switzerland all the time, a plebiscit. An initiative to hold a referendum in May 19, to go to the Volkskammer in 1990, when in May, when actually everything is already decided, but they want to collect signatures and want to propose to include the possibility of a referendum in the constitution. And the argument they are bringing forward is that we think, and I'm going to translate this on the spot, we think that it is urgently necessary that the referendum is being included in the constitution to achieve permanent consensus with decisions being made and to guarantee that initiatives from the people are, you know, being integrated and accepted into the decision-making process. So the notion of permanent consensus is noteworthy here. Please keep that in mind. The second one is ranges from, and this is still, I have to research who Abe Inzen is, an East German scientist, you know, from ideas of Totaldemokratie to, that is a document from a rural context in 1989, where the rural community kind of got together, remembered how they used to do things before the dictatorship, and that means not only the socialist dictatorship, but also, of course, national socialist dictatorship. And they want to bring back the old German rural democracy system, where the idea is that the people's rule can only be secured in the long run if it is actually executed by the people themselves. And they want to do that by, you see that here below, by forming, by every household gets a vote. Seven people are supposedly in a household, that house used to be, and we kind of go back to this number, and then we have a Rat of the 1949 coming together and building up a structure that supersedes or replaces a parliamentary system that, of course, is not in place there. But the I think the opposite idea is the Bonner Republic and its political system, right? The part you can see here argues that the people had no fault and no guilt in what went wrong, but we want to take matters again on our own hands. And this, we do this by going back into the old German rule, Gemeindeversammlungen, because the people are the decision makers themselves. So that's one example, and we can go into detail if you want to, of a notion that direct democratic, basic democratic procedures guarantee real democracy. And you find that in many different ways, in many documents. And that's just one of the most striking examples coming from Das Volk in den Dörfern. And the third one is a suggestion sent to the Gemeinsame Verfassungskommission that I've mentioned before from someone who worked at the, please ignore the, I think I should have blackened it out, someone that worked at the Medizinisches Zentrum in Rostock, a doctor supposedly, who suggests that there should be a permanent organ next to all parliaments called das Organ der Volkskontrolle, that is kind of a permanent structure next to the parliaments controlling what parliaments, professional politicians actually are doing. And he suggests a way to form that those bodies, to install something. And that's, of course, deeply influenced by the distrust and the misuse of power in East Germany. But it was proposed once there was a free way to bring it, to, you know, to bring to the table a suggestion for how to create a democracy that is working in better ways than East Germany. So those are three examples, very brief, but I think they hopefully they serve well to illustrate what we're talking about. So I But some of my conclusions are here, tentative conclusions. Democracy is a promise and a project in both Germanies, not only since 1989, but since 1945. Peculiarly, East German perceptions of democracy as idea and practice are marginal and marginalized. That is the discussions to be held still. Why are they marginal, remained marginal after 1990? And some key aspects I want to point out here. Politics as a means to forge social consensus and harmony. That's the permanent consensus, the notion that democracy is good and well if we all agree. It sounds naive, but I think it's meant very seriously and probably has much to do with the disruptions that those generations went through in the East. And we can discuss the larger contexts here. Direct democracy means immediate, quasi-familiar. There, I think we find back those notions that society is a big family. There's a quasi-familial citizen-state relationship. There's no notion that it's good to have a distance to state institutions, but rather the opposite is wanted, right? It's desired that there's a kind of, it's even some kind of organic idea of state, society, and citizens. There's deep distrust in parties, career politicians, and representative structures, procedures. And Gauck and Merkel, as I mentioned, president and chancellor, of course, longtime chancellor, proved to be in this logic are exceptions that prove the rule. And I'm going to have a chapter on Angela Merkel. I wrote a radio essay on Merkel as East German chancellor, what that actually meant in terms of representation. And I think it's a fascinating subject by itself. But the fact is that Merkel's chancellorship did not solve kind of the inner Einheit problems. We have quite the opposite. During her term, those divergences fermented and continued and even worsened, you could say. There's a tendency to be very creative when it comes to democratic practices. You can see that to this day, and also social scientists have researched that people in East Germany still tend to rely on rather diverse political actions like Mahnwachen, Spaziergänge, walks, things that are not directly detached to joining a party, you know, using the procedures and the possibilities given by the constitution, but rather doing that outside of those procedures and regulations that you have, because there's a belief that those regulations are not efficient or not sozusagen people's nagen. And volatile affiliations, which is also something that social scientists and demographers tell us, that East Germans tend to vote and affiliate themselves less permanently, and that there, which means there's hope as well, you know, which means people also take leave easier from certain conceptions or practical affiliations when it comes to parties or associations. And that goes into the direction of why the AfD, why people like Björn Höcke and Götz Kubitschek seem to understand the East so well, so that they, you know, reach 25-30% of the vote in some parts of Egypt, even up to 40% in Anklam and Mecklenburg-Vorpommern. I think there's a peculiar mix of a longing for authority and autonomy, which goes completely against the grain of what the Berlin representative / Bonn representative democracy used to be, and of course with the unification of Germany has come to be in an all-German context. And the AfD politicians who go to East Germany and say, you are not second-class citizens, you're the real German, this is the heart of Germany, there's no 68 here, you've remained pure, simple, heads-on, practical, creative, all the things that I mentioned, is something that the AfD prunes and invites and praises as something, you know, this is Politik von unten nach oben, politics from below to above, top down, not top down, but from down to the top. That is also completely, of course, against the very system that is in place at the moment. Populist and neo-nationalist citizen movements, such as Pegida and AfD, calling themselves Sammlungsbewegung, appeal to the direct democratic expertise in that sense that I just outlined, and homogeneous notions of politics and community deeply rooted in East German society to this day. So finally, there are ambivalent co-transformational ramifications for West German democracy as well, and thus by extension for the Berlin Republic, going back to the initial question, whether, you know, German democracy. So could we say that in due course and in course of this process, there was a somewhat delusional self-validation as a republic, because the Grundgesetz was taken over, the Bonner Republic became the Berlin Republic. There was a validation that liberal democracy as it was created in West Germany was the fundament for united Germany. But was that, after all, maybe somewhat delusional? Because it turns out that this republic is less liberal, less inclusive, and less open to pluralization than long believed. And I'm thinking here not only of the fact that those East German democratic notions that I just outlined, that I do not evaluate or assess as you know, being stupid or naive or bringing destruction to democracy, but they're there, but they don't have a space. They don't have forums. They don't find representation in the Berlin Republic and the democracy we have these days. And I think this can be, you can compare that to other contexts. For instance, migrants who come to Germany who also had no part in building and, you know, creating the fundamentals of the institutions of the system that is now in place, who come as kind of a newcomers, and it still remains to be seen. And maybe the system is more open and more plural in that sense, that actually now the new Bundestag is amazingly diverse and the system seems to be taking in those changes. But I think it's worthwhile thinking about what that means for the democracy of Germany since 1949 in the long run. And that would be my final thought. I thank you all for the attention.
Thank you for listening to the German Historical Institute London podcast. Follow us on social media and check our website to keep up to date with new episodes.